From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of April, 2025. It's Farm Safety Net Decision Day. Oh, and Tax Day, too. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin. We'll have a remembrance of Bob Dunker from the University of Illinois, agronomist and superintendent of the South Farms. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and the Agricultural Energies with Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing here in Champaign on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I checked in with agricultural economist Nick Paulson and Gary Schnitke earlier today to see if they were still leaning towards Arc County for corn on the Arc PLC decision. The answer remains yes, and if they were still firmly in the Arc County for soybean camp, the answer was mostly but still yes. With the caveat that the tariffs and trade information, if it were to drag on through the marketing year, could create an issue.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.81 1/4, 3 3/4 of a cent lower. July down 3 1/4 at $4.89 1/2, and December at $4.64 1/4 bushel, a gain of 2 1/4 cents. May soybeans down 5 3/4 at $10.36. July at $10.46 1/2, 3 3/4 lower. New crop November finished at $10.29 3/4, up 1 1/4. Bean meal down $2.90. Bean oil $1.01 higher. Soft red winter wheat in the July down 5 3/4 at $5.56, and the hard red at $5.68 1/2, 1 3/4 lower. Live cattle futures in Chicago up 72 1/2 cents. Feeders $2.10 higher, and lean hogs a nickel higher for the day. Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us to take a look at the marketplace for the day. Thanks for being with us again on a Tuesday. We appreciate that.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Tell me about the trade in Chicago last night and today. It seemed awfully quiet.
Yes, it definitely was a quiet overnight for trade, and quiet throughout the day today. Last night, the corn market trading just a little bit higher as the corn crop is 4% planted. So we got that news yesterday afternoon versus 6% a year ago, and a little bit below the five-year average. Corn planting in Illinois is 1% done. Iowa is 2% done. Minnesota 1%. Nebraska 1%. Kansas at 11%. Missouri at 9%. So just kind of that slower pace perked up the market a little bit last night and this morning. But in general, I think because corn market right now at next level overhead resistance near that $5 area, we didn't have any immediate big news to take the market above that price point. So I saw just a little bit of back and fill action today as we start to deal with a holiday trading week with markets closed Friday, and just keeping an eye on the weather and planting progress in general.
So May corn went to a high overnight at around 488, 490, somewhere in that range. Do you suppose that producers who have old crop corn left need to have marketing orders for it at the $5 and above level?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. So right again, short-term resistance now at the $5 level. If by chance the market can get through there, the next target higher would be the February high price, which is near the 520-ish area. For prices to go above that, it would have to take a dramatic weather issue. You know, Mother Nature, of course, in charge, but based on what we know right now, $5, $5.20 seems like some logical potential targets and an opportunity for producers to get a little bit more current with their cash sales.
What is fundamentally supporting the corn market?
Well, big picture right now, it's the tight ending stocks that we have at 1.4. 5 billion bushels. You know, back years ago, I feel like that number would be the equivalent of $6 corn. But because the market is aware that we're going to get these higher acres planted this spring, we know that there's a potentially for this bigger crop coming. So that's weighing on prices a little bit. And of course, the market always just a little cautious to see if there's going to be any new tariff news lurking around the corner as well. But demand for corn, old crop, new crop, is still fantastic with exports still going strong. Export inspections this week were fantastic, so we are shipping corn out of the country. Ethanol demand remains strong. And over on the biofuel side today, for soybeans and soybean oil, we had the crush report today. And the crush report came in at 194.5 million bushels of beans crushed over the last month. That was up 9% from February, but a little bit below expectations. The soy oil stocks came in at 1.498 billion pounds, and that was below last month and below expectations. So we are exporting a lot of soybean oil. So just that biofuel industry continues to be a bright spot for the agricultural markets right now. And again, with corn and beans, just a little bit of a holding pattern here as we get through this holiday week and start looking at weather and planting progress next week.
December corn, since its late March low, has managed to rally 30 cents. Is there more left in it?
Well, the next resistance point higher would be the 475 level. We finished today 464. 475 is the top of the downtrend line, and so that would be a really tough number for the market to get through. It would have to be on a planting delay or some sort of hot, dry weather later on this summer that could maybe make the market a little bit jittery. But, you know, it's important to really know that even with that expected 5 million acres of corn to be planted, weather still matters. You know, the likelihood of the USDA and the May WASDE, they're going to put a big number for yield with that additional 5 million acres. So when we get that May WASDE report, they'll probably use a number of 181 for yield, and that would make the new crop ending stocks back above 2 billion bushels. But reality, if we have some weather hiccups along the way, and if we have yield looking like 177 with those 5 million extra acres of corn planted, ending stocks are going to be at 1.73. And if we have yield coming in closer to 175, which, hey, still pretty good crop year overall, well, then we got ending stocks right at 1.5 billion bushels. So weather still matters this spring and summer. And that might also be part of the reason why the corn market is just ready to just be a little bit cautious here, waiting to see what unfolds in the coming weeks.
Soybeans in the November new crop has posted its fifth gaining day in a mini sessions. That seems like good news.
Yes, that market has been inching higher, but very similar to corn, up against a resistance area. So for November soybeans, it's twofold. The top of the downtrend line comes right in near 1040, and that also happens to be the 200-day moving average. Back in late January, early February, the soybean market tested the 200-day moving average, which back then was near 1072. Market didn't have enough of a reason to get through it, so we saw prices then slide lower throughout February. So here we are, back up near that 200-day moving average, which now is near that 1040 price point area. So we're going to be seeing if we can see some friendly fundamental news here in the coming weeks to justify prices to push above that point or not. If by chance we could get November beans above 1040 based on some sort of friendly fundamental news, the upside swing objective, just based on a chart, points to $11. So that would be encouraging and welcome for so many. But again, we need some fresh fundamental news to unfold before that can occur.
Thank you much, Naomi.
Thank you.
Naomi Bloom is with Total Farm Marketing. com. Hey, don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. There today you'll find a series of articles you should probably read before you go to the field to plant yet this week or next. One of them's on the principles of soil-applied herbicides. That's by Aaron Hager. Another one is optimizing corn and soybean seeding rates. That's by Giovanni Prezafontes. We'll hear from Gio later in the week, and hopefully from Aaron, too. But you should read those articles today. They're on our website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Last week, I lost a friend and a colleague. Bob Dunker passed at 74 years of age. He retired a few years ago. Bob was an institution here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you ever attended an agronomy day on our South Farms, you probably met him. His obituary makes note that Bob dedicated his career to the U of I, where he worked in the Department of Crop Sciences as an agronomist and served as superintendent of the Crop Sciences Research and Education Center. It says he found great fulfillment in his work and developed meaningful relationships with his colleagues throughout his tenure. That's an understatement. I helped out with Agronomy Day for years, making sure people were on the right rack wagons to go see the researchers in the field. Bob sent me a photo one year. He'd photoshopped in an A+ on that little round sign I was holding that actually had which tour was about to depart written on it. It's just one of those little things Bob Dunker did to make you feel great about the job. He loved the moral plots, too, and made sure those were always cared for. In 2010, he and I put a little radio story together about them. I'd like to play that now for you in fond remembrance of Bob.
When you leave the hallowed halls of Illinois, Illinois.
You know, there's a story here at the University of Illinois.
There is just one thing you can't forget, my boy.
And it is a very true story.
It's an old established rule.
Our undergraduate library, the place where students go and study, our undergraduate library is built underground. And that happened for only one reason.
Oh, you can't throw shit on the corn. It'll die as sure as you're born. No, sir, we don't mess around. Now that berry's underground, because you can't throw shade on the corn.
Nope, you just can't throw shade on the corn in the moral plots.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the story about the undergraduate library is the fact that it's actually built underground rather than above ground to reduce any impact of shade on the moral plots.
That's agronomist Bob Dunker. He takes care of the moral plots and says the undergraduate library isn't the only building adjusted downward to keep the sunshine on the corn. And it's all happened for good reason.
Well, you know, it really is a historical continuum, kind of a living museum. You know, it was established in 1876, and it's the longest continuous research plot in America, and actually has the longest continuous corn plot in the world that has been documented. And you know, over the series of that time, it's been pretty much managed very similar as far as rotational scheme and looking at the effects of both fertilizer and crop rotation on soil quality.
The moral plots, established in the mid-late 1800s, are just about as old as the University of Illinois itself. This land grant was established in 1867. The moral plots were much bigger back then. Three of the original plots remain, says Bob Dunker.
You know, originally there were 10 plots in the moral plots, and now there actually are three, plots 3, 4, and 5, and Plot 3 has been in continuous corn since 1876, and, you know, Plot 4 has been in a two-year rotation from 1876 until 1967, was in a corn-oats rotation, and then soybeans were swapped out for oats after that period to more closely reflect what our typical agriculture is for this day. And plot 5 has always been in a three-year rotation. It still has oats. It's a corn-oats alfalfa rotation. And so that's our three-year rotation. You know, only every 6 years, because of the way the rotations occur, is it in continuous corn. And that's when we can actually measure the responses of the different treatments because we have a uniform crop.
The continuous corn plots, the plot that hasn't ever been seeded with anything other than corn, typically has the lowest yields. The three-year corn-oats-alfalfa rotation has the best long-term average yield. You can come see the moral plots for yourself on the University of Illinois campus. They're just to the east of the underground undergraduate library. The Moral Plots song, as performed by the other guys, they've been an a cappella group on campus since 1968. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Much.
That was the late Bob Dunker talking about the Morrill Plots here on the University of Illinois campus. Bob passed last week. He's survived by his wife, three daughters, his son, 16 grandchildren, and four great-grandchildren. They tell us that throughout his life, Bob quietly helped many people, never seeking recognition for his generosity. He certainly set an example for us all to follow. Funeral arrangements are being made by the Freeze Funeral Home in St. Joseph. Visitation is this Friday evening. Yesterday afternoon, USDA NASS released the weekly crop progress report. It shows that 4% of the corn crop around the nation has been planted, 5% is the rolling five-year average, 2% of the soybeans have been sown, and that's right on the rolling five-year average. 8% of the winter wheat has headed around the nation, the five-year average, also 8%. The condition of the crop said to be 41% good and 6% excellent. That's down one percentage point from the previous week and down from the previous year by 8 percentage points. Now here are the statisticians with updates from their regions.
This is Melissa Couch, agricultural statistician. Dry conditions helped Iowa farmers as days suitable for field work increased to 5.9 for the week ending April 13, 2025. Field work included tillage, seeding oats, and applying anhydrous manure and dry fertilizer. There were also reports of corn and soybeans being planted. Topsoil moisture condition rated 7% very short, 24% short, 68% adequate, and 1% surplus. Oats seeding reached 47% complete, 3 days behind last year, but 3 days ahead of the five-year average. 6% of the expected oat acreage has emerged, 5 days behind last year, but equal to the average. No livestock issues were reported. And that's this week's report of crop progress and conditions across the state of Iowa. For the USDA NASS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Melissa Couch.
Hello everyone, this is Brad Summa, director of the USDA NASS Heartland Region, and this is the Illinois Crop Progress and Condition Report. They were 2.7 days suitable for field work in the week ending April 13th. Statewide, the average temperature was 46.1 degrees, 3.2 degrees below normal. Precipitation averaged 0.23 inches, which was 0.72 inches below normal as well. The top soil moisture supply is now rated at 1%, very short, 10% short, 69% adequate, and 20% surplus. For the Illinois corn plant, the corn planted has now reached 1% compared to the five-year average of 4%. And for the soybeans have been planted across the fields in 2% of the state, equal to the five-year average. Winter wheat headed reached 1% compared to the five-year average of 3%, and the winter wheat condition was rated 1% poor, 33% fair, 57% good, and 9% excellent. For the Illinois cattlemen, the pasture condition was rated 3% very poor, 14% poor, 37% fair, 31% good, and 15% excellent. Again, this is Brad Summa, director of the USDA NASS Heartland Region, serving the farmers and ranchers in Missouri and Illinois. Have a great week and a wonderful Easter weekend.
I'm Nathaniel Warnsky with USDA NASS. This week, Indiana topsoil moisture rated 93% adequate to surplus, subsoil moisture 86% adequate to surplus, both an improvement from the previous week. Days suitable for field work was limited to 1.5 days due to continued wet field conditions. Winter wheat jointed is at 14%, significantly behind the five-year average. The crop was rated 67% good to excellent. And that's this week's report of crop progress and conditions across the state of Indiana. I am Nathaniel Warnsky, USDA NASS.
Our thanks go to the statisticians from across the Midwest for their weekly updates. On this Tuesday, let's check the agricultural energies with Dave Chatterton. Thanks, Dave, for being with us.
Yeah, Todd, thanks for having me. Been a pretty interesting week in the energy complex here, as we've noted here. We've had roughly a $10 drop in crude here since the beginning of the month, and touched a 55 handle in the spot crude month, touched a $2 number in the spot diesel fuel market in the futures market here. So, very much like grain, some interesting times going on.
This price moving lower in the marketplace for the energies has something to do with the tariffs, but also has a lot to do with the easing of what the oil-producing countries, OPEC, has been up to. Can you tell me about their production patterns?
Yeah, Todd. So as you indicated, very much kind of a, I guess I'll refer to it as a double whammy here for the energy complex. You had the fears of a trade war and a global recession, primarily between the U.S. and China, fueling one thing on the demand side. And then OPEC surprised the market here by announcing a plan to up their increases for bringing supplies back. And if you go back and look at, you know, OPEC over the years, the current plan was to bring back 2.2 million barrels per day of production that had been taken out, and do that between now and the end of next year. They were going to do that at a rate starting in April and this month, and in May, of 135,000 barrels per day of oil. They decided kind of on a whim last week to just go ahead and increase that. They tripled that. They went to 411,000 barrels a day for April and May, and they were going to have a meeting in May to decide what the June output is going to be. So at the end of the day, you've got concerns about demand on one side of the market, and you've got increasing supply on the other side of the market that are feeding these fears of a glut. Of course, doing, you know, we, at the end of the day, these fuel prices are roughly at 4-year lows, or at the lowest that we've seen really since the height of the COVID pandemic.
For producers who have not contracted their diesel fuel needs either for spring or fall, does that mean they go hand to mouth and purchase as needed?
It's a really good question. I think right now it doesn't hurt to have, you know, some inventory in front of you, Todd. Certainly supply disruptions, that we know there's a lot of headline risk in the oil markets on any given day and time, but especially in the times that we're living in now with what's going on the political front. Certainly those things are out there. The U.S. is still moving to potentially, you know, they're negotiating with Iran, but maybe potentially moving to take those exports back off of the marketplace. So it doesn't hurt to have a little bit of inventory in front of you. That said, I wouldn't be topping off my tanks or contracting for 2026 or maybe doing those things just at this particular point. I think we've got a little bit of time for this to play out, as right now we've got more production than we do demand, and certainly that could change in the future. But I think the recipe for right now is maybe continue a little bit of pressure on the price front.
Before I let you go, can you give me an update on the ethanol marketplace?
Yeah, and you know, been beat up a little bit by what's happened with gasoline. You're almost having gasoline and ethanol trade at parity. We did that last year. We're kind of working on that this year. Plant margins have held in. They've been okay, but we're talking they're 5 or 10 cents a gallon. There's certainly not anything that's stupendous here that's going to, you know, to increase blends or increase demand. In the meantime, we continue to see those ethanol stocks be near record levels or record highs, and kind of a little bit worrisome here that we've lost a little bit of that export market, and particularly worried about what's happening with Canada here. Those exports are still available to flow, still somewhat exempt from the tariffs at the moment here, but Canada's our number one importer of ethanol, and we kind of, you know, need to fix that hole or patch that leak, if you will, to kind of keep the thing balanced here.
Thank you much, and I'm looking forward to talking with you Thursday for Commodity Week.
You bet, Todd. Looking forward to it as well.
That's Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. Let's take a quick look at the weather forecast now for the growing regions of the United States, particularly the Corn Belt. Don Day is here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don. Thank you for being with us. Let's start out west and then detail things for us going to the east from the Dakotas to Ohio.
Well, we're going to see a pretty active weather pattern over the next week or so. The western United States will see a system coming out of the Northwest Territories of Canada here at the end of the week. And this system is going to end up being a significant weather maker, because what it's going to do is it's going to drop in some very cold air into the northern and central Rockies. Places in the central Rockies, places like Denver, the high country out west, is going to see a significant spring snow event. And some of those snows could get into South Dakota, parts of western areas of Nebraska. And then as that system comes out of the Rockies this weekend, right around Easter Sunday and into Monday and Tuesday, we're going to see widespread rain go into all of the central and western and northwest areas of the Corn Belt. Now, we don't see a lot of precipitation in North Dakota. Some rain is going to fall up there and a little bit of wet snow, but you get across Iowa, eastern Nebraska, central eastern Kansas, Missouri, and into Illinois, we're going to see rainfall amounts that are going to be between 1 to 3 inches. So it's going to get wet again.
are the temperatures cool with that rainfall, or are they moderate as like this time of year would normally be?
Well, for this time of year, certainly if you were to look at temperature anomalies and look at the temperatures that will be coming in with this system, it's going to be a little on the cool side. However, it looks like we certainly don't need to worry about snow, at least for most of the central United States. And then once it goes out, we see temperatures about 5 or 6 degrees above average. So if we were to categorize it as a warmer spring rain, I think that might be a good way to describe it.
Will the temperatures stay warm then and dry things out afterwards?
Well, there's going to be some ups and downs. I would expect another surge of some cooler air coming in right around the 22nd to the 25th of April. So it will not be a sustained warming trend. There is going to be a lot of back and forth still. We're seeing a lot of displacement of air masses, which is typical for spring, which means you're going to get periods of southerly flow, which is what we're going to see here between now and the middle of next week. That's why it's going to be a generally warm rain. But that will be then displaced by a wind aloft coming in from the northwest late next week and the following weekend. So that's going to cause temperatures to go back down again. So a sustained pattern of warmer temperatures is not in the offing. It's going to be a lot of little bit of a roller coaster.
Any freeze or frost worries?
I would say that we certainly need to watch the northern and western areas because we see temperature anomalies around the 24th and the 25th as much as 10 to 12 degrees below seasonal averages. Now, that would likely send overnight low temperatures into the upper 30s and lower 40s, but I don't see that the frost risk maybe getting much further south than northern Iowa.
Thank you, Don. Don Day is with Day Weather. He is in Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.